I'm going to be the first presenter. I'm Bob Huttmacher with the University of California, and my presentation is going to be on yield growth, rooting pattern responses to deficit drip irrigation. And this is, I'm going to report on some work that we've done over a multi-year period, focusing on some work from the last couple of, last few years, 3 or 4 years, in mostly work done in clay loam soils in the Westside Research Center in western Fresno County in the San Joaquin Valley. In prior years, I wouldn't have been able to say quite as much about what water limits are really in the San Joaquin Valley, but we're in a very tight water situation, very low snowpack this year. So part of the reason for being interested in deficit irrigation approaches and drip irrigation is some real needs to look at opportunities for conserving water. So I want to describe some examples of deficit subsurface drip, discuss some impacts of those practices on yield and relative impacts on some other characteristics. So the first round of studies that I'll talk about are gradually developing deficit irrigation practices. And what we've done is chosen irrigation treatments that impose different percentages of replacement of crop evapotranspiration estimates during these rough periods in terms of time and growth stage of the crop. So what you can see in looking at this and the subsequent graphs will be that as we go from irrigation treatment 1 to irrigation treatment 6, we're going from essentially non-stress to more gradual stress that develops primarily during bloom and in post-bloom periods for this first set of studies. Both of these happen to be higher ligus pressure years. So what I'll do is give you some information on the cumulative effects of the drip treatments. And again, a reminder, treatment 1, 2, and then as you go up towards 6, these are progressively more serious deficit irrigation approaches as you go across. So this is cotton lint yields in Pima, Phytogen 805. And part of what you can see here is the cumulative effects of the more severe deficit irrigations, treatments 5 and 6 on the right, to that reduce yields even when we used higher pre-plant irrigations. And the first round of studies I'm going to talk about, we used a low pre-irrigation amount of about 3 to 3.5 inches and a high pre-irrigation amount of about 6 inches to replace some of the stored soil water because, again, we're in a tremendously low rainfall location. This is the 2010 second year results with the same Pima variety. And again, you can see a similar type of response. And one thing I might want to point out is that when you're in the more moderate deficit irrigation treatments, this higher pre-plant irrigation, the plants were able to access that water even though we're using about a 2 times per week drip irrigation frequency. The rooting systems still extend down into the deeper parts of the profile and they're able to make up for some of the deficit responses, and we do get some yield improvements in not in the high water treatments as you might expect, but in the intermediate water treatments. And again, when you get to the more severe deficits, that's not quite enough to make up a difference in these Pimas. A little bit different story, but somewhat similar. These are Acalas, a fairly large full season Acala Phytogen 725 RS. This is 2009 results from again the same location, intermixed among the Pimas in this study. Again, you can see the high pre-irrigation response in these intermediate ones, but in some occasions in the Acalas, we did see that response to higher soil water availability with the higher pre-season irrigation showing up even in the more deficit irrigated treatments. And again, a similar pattern in 2010. Again, these are all somewhat moderate yields for our location. Again, that was related to ligus populations in these fields. What happened in these kind of situations is that we saw, this is fruiting branch number plotted against bowl retention percentages. And part of what you can see here as you go toward the more stressed treatments, like treatment 5 here is represented in the dotted lines. So that's the 180, 60% ET replacement treatment. What happened is you get in the upper part of the plant, and that's where we started seeing the loss of retention. That happened in first position fruit, second position fruit, when we get into the Pimas, in third position fruit as well. This shows some data for Pima under these same sets of treatments by fruiting node groups, fruiting nodes 1 to 5, 6 to 10, 11 to 15, and so on. When you get into the higher parts of the plant, what happens with these more severe deficit treatments, the ones shown in green and orange here, is that's where we really see the big drop off. And so it kind of makes sense. The maturity of the plant is earlier. You start losing opportunities for late season bolls and further out position bolls on the plants. I'm not going to spend much time on it, but we did look at effects on select HVI quality parameters. So we realize obviously that if we have big impacts with these stress treatments on bulk values for HVI for length or strength, that we have some real issues to deal with. And in these particular rounds of studies, again in a clay loam soil, high water holding capacity soils, we didn't really see much in the way of dramatic impacts on mite length or strength. And that was true also in Pima, Akela, and the prior picture. So the last 2 years, what we did is came up with a more moderate deficit SDI approach or subsurface drip approach that we wanted to look at with multiple varieties. And I'm not going to have time to go into all the sort of nuances of what happens with each variety, but I did want to let you know that we had, you know, a pretty good cross-section of growth habits and all represented in the trial. What we settled down on in terms of treatments were some more moderate treatments at 80, 160% of ET replacement during those same relative periods that correspond roughly to June, July, August. 80, 80, 80, 80, 60, 60, and then 100, 180 is sort of our non-stressed one for comparison. What happened with those treatments then, this is 2012, the numbers that I'm showing are for Akela. We have separate, similar, about the same application amounts for the Pima, but we do have some differences in soil water. But again, in the interest of time, I'm going to just show the Akela numbers here. Across these treatments then, we applied 23 inches of total drip water, 22 inches in treatment 2, 17.9, and then 26 inches in treatment 4. And this shows the soil water use in an 8-foot profile between the planting and post-harvest period for a total water use estimate ranging from a high of about 29.5 to a low in the most severe deficit treatment, treatment 3, of 23.5 inches. So if you go the same type of data for 2013, the past year's data, a similar range in terms of applied water that's related to crop evapotranspiration estimates. And then these are the soil water use numbers, 5.8 for a high on treatment 3 in terms of soil water extraction out of an 8-foot profile, 1.7 for a low on treatment 4. And again, a range going from 24.4 to almost 30 inches. In terms of yield responses, again, I don't want to spend a lot of time on this going across it, but these represent relatively full season varieties with a lot of branching in the case of something like 802RF in Pima, all the way down to experimental cultivars from Bayer that we work with, which are modified columnar type of characteristics. And you can see in general that, very broadly speaking, there aren't a lot of differences between treatment 1 and treatment 2. But we do tend to get a drop-off that's somewhat moderate in yields in treatment 3 with the more severe deficits, the 60% ET replacement in the mid-bloom through 20% open bowl periods. And if you compare that, again, for the purposes of this study, it got complicated enough that we only did the treatment 4, the high water non-stress treatment, at least that's what I'm calling it, only in one of the varieties, the 802RF. So this is 2013 data, the previous one was 2012. Also, this is data for Pima. And again, similar types of responses, some variation according to the years, but in seed cotton yields, again, treatment 1 and treatment 2 actually did fairly similar in terms of yields, and in general, a mild drop-off depending on the entry as you go with treatment 3. And one thing to notice in these data sets is that having the plants be essentially a more non-stress type of situation really didn't improve yields in the treatment 4 for comparison purposes. And again, similar patterns were seen in Akelas going across, and again with this type of a drop-off as you get into the treatment 3, and again, no significant yield improvements with the treatment 4, you know, in the one entry that we tried that in. Here's 2013 data also for Akela. And again, similar trends there. And actually, I've been kind of relieved to see consistently that this treatment 4 doesn't really do much in terms of any kind of yield improvements, because we've been saying for years under our San Joaquin Valley conditions in most years. Non-stress type of conditions are really not the best for cotton production. I have more root length data than what I'm showing, but I just wanted to put a little bit of information out as to, I think, to explain in part why we see some fairly good abilities of the plants to make use of available stored soil water if it's there. This is SDI or drip root length density shown in under the plant row adjacent to the drip line. These are alternate row drip lines on 40-inch spacing. And this is the dry furrow. So we do have some lots of root activity as we're closer to the emitter location, but we do have quite a bit of activity down in the 3-4 foot, 5 foot, 6 foot zone in this soil type. And I think that's a large part of the reason why we are able to see some good ability for the plants to be kind of buffered against some of the water deficits that occur, as long as we do have some deep stored soil water. And in the same field, in adjacent plots, we had some furrow treatments where we looked at root length densities, and that's shown in the blue triangles here. The other colored are the same data points as in the previous slide. So again, I wanted to include that to say that I think that's part of our explanation for why we are able to have these plants kind of hang in there as long as there's some stored deep soil water. And just two final slides here. In terms of yield and production per unit water use, one way of looking at how this might stack up in terms of efficiency. Seed cotton yields are shown on the left for the upland varieties for the 2 years of this, the last study. And then this is yield per unit water use shown on the right for 2012 and 2013. And those moderate deficit treatments, treatment 3, treatment 2, generally are the ones that show higher productivity per unit water use. And that was also true in the Pima varieties. This is an average across the 5 varieties. The previous one was the Acala slide. So I'll wrap it up with just saying that, again, we're looking at practical deficit irrigation approaches that sort of go along with the goal of most of our growers to still maintain relatively high yields. These are long-term, slowly developing stress in an arid environment where we really don't have much chance of rainfall. These are clay loam soils. At higher stress levels, we did see fruiting site number reductions, more through impacts on stem and fruiting branch growth. So again, we need options in terms of what to do in years where we have alternative uses for our irrigation water at other places on farm. And in a lot of cases, cotton's gonna be one of the target crops because we think we can still achieve some halfway decent productivity and efficiency and use of water, freeing up some water, hopefully, for some other uses on farm. Okay?